The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. There's so much happening in fintech at the moment. It's a very exciting time. I think one of the things that's really interesting to ponder on all of these changes taking place with mobile payments and mobile enablement is potentially the greatest growth we're going to have is in just purely behavior of banking, the way banking behavior changes. And it's not going to be just for traditionally banked customers. I was having a brief chat with the with Jen Tesher from the CFSI, Center for Financial Services Innovation, this morning. And we were musing on this fact that the whole classification of unbanked may very well disappear very shortly because they're going to be overwhelmed with options and choices. So it's a very, very interesting time. But underpinning this is that many of the ways we used to think about saving money, many of the products we used to think about are changing because of behavior around that. So this is really what I wanted to get into today on the show, sort of that behavioral shift, particularly these new emerging customers. And jumping into that. But before we do that,
we've got the pleasure of interviewing today Sunny Singh. Sunny is the Senior VP and General Manager for the Financial Services Industry Line at Oracle. And he's just coming off the back of a big conference, Oracle's Open World event. So, Sunny, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you. Real pleasure to be here, Brett.
So tell us about Open World this time out. I mean, it's something you guys do regularly, but in terms of the financial services or financial technology focus more specifically, what's big at this year's Open World conference?
So, Brett, that's a great question. We actually do this event annually, and it's kind of our major showcase event, both from a product perspective and a customer perspective. This year, we have 60,000 attendees from about 140 countries in attendance here in person. In particular, for financial services, we have two or three things running in parallel. We have an entire financial services track that focuses very specifically on fintech. There are about 24 to 25 sessions that are dedicated over the next 3 days to the financial services industry across insurance and banking and capital markets. About 20% of our 2,000 strong executive event called Leader Circle is all in financial services. So, one-fifth of the, senior VPs and line of business heads that are in the executive track are from financial services. So it's clearly an area where we continue to see a lot of momentum.
And are you focused mainly on the U.S. or is this truly a global event?
Oh, it's a completely global event. We have customers from the U.S. like KeyBank and Amex, but we also have from Asia Pac. We have a lot of representation from Asia Pac, CIBC from Canada. We have Suncorp and National Australia Bank and Westpac visiting from Australia. We have a number of customers from the Middle East and Africa and West. Western Europe, all here sharing their experiences and presenting, you know, the various deployments that they've undertaken over the last 12 to 18 months.
So, you know, for the last few years, we've been seeing a lot of news about core system replacement, and obviously your iFlex platform and so forth has been a big part of that. But do you see that we're still doing some of that housekeeping stuff, or have we moved on to more of sort of the channel side of things and, you know, sort of more interactive and cloud-based activity?
So, sure. We actually did a press release today where KeyBank has declared the intent to modernize their digital engagement platform here in the U.S. with Oracle Banking Platform. As you recall, we have two major product lines. One is the FlexCube product line, as you pointed out, and we also built Oracle Banking Platform, which is a modern, completely componentized core banking platform and has all the three layers, so you can truly take a customer-centric view of all the products that you're bringing to the customer, and then a highly componentized modern core that you can progressively uptake. So I think the years of doing, you know, massive back-to-front replacements is over. However, they're very keen to go after kind of a two-speed approach. At the fast speed, they're fixing their digital engagement with their customers. They're at a slightly slower speed and in a more progressive fashion, they're replacing the core. So I think the story has not changed. The approach and the framework in which they undertake that approach has definitely evolved.
So particularly for retail banks, you know, there's a big looming question about where the revenue is going to come from, because as consumer behavior is shifting rather dramatically, we're seeing a rapid decline in the use of branches, and as a result, the fear is that revenue is sort of going to has topped out to some extent in terms of branch-driven revenue. So how is this going to enable the flow of revenue through new channels like smartphones and wearables and more contextualization of banking?
So, Brett, I think that's a great question, and we have to look at the three key elements of how consumers will behave with the banks. The best way to describe it is know me, empower me, and wow me. The first two are relatively straightforward. We've seen a lot of conversations about that. Know me is really about having a 720 degrees view about the customer, which is not only understanding everything about them that you know from the data within the four walls of the bank, but also enriching that data with all the information these consumers are creating about themselves outside the four walls of the bank. That then drives to information-centric engagement, and that engagement in the framework of empower me needs to be anytime, any place, and any channel. This is where a lot of the digital activity is going. But the real uplift in revenue is really going to come from the third pillar, which is I'm describing as wow me, and wow me really means the right product at the right time and the right service every time. And for this, you know, you need to really leverage that information, do a lot of fine-grained segmentation, and then understand the complete value of that relationship so that you can bring the right pricing and the right products to the customer at the right time. This is the expectation. And I think this will be a double-edged sword. On one end, the banks who do this well will definitely glean the uplift in revenues, and the banks who don't will really have their knees cut off. While this sounds like a doomsday scenario, I think it's not something that we're not observing in the marketplace already.
No, it's the new competency of banking. So thanks for joining us. It's Sunny Singh. He's the Senior Vice President and General Manager for Oracle's Financial Services line. Good luck with the rest of Open World, Sunny.
Thank you, Brett. Pleasure to be on your forum here.
Yeah, thanks for joining Breaking Banks.
Great. So let's now get into some of the meat. Right up now, I'd like to invite Dan Coates to join us. Dan, are you on?
I am indeed.
Welcome. So Dan Coates is the president of an organization called Y-Pulse, and we want to talk about some of the stuff that, you know, particularly around millennials. Very, very interesting. So Dan, first of all, tell us about Y-Pulse.
Yeah, Y-Pulse has been around for 10 years now, studying members of the millennial generation. Our organization was initially called Y-Pulse because we called it Gen Y 10 years ago, but a couple of guys, authors Neil Howe and Bill Strauss, coined the term millennials in 1992, and the industry more or less decided to switch over to that. And Basically, these are people, according to their definition, who were born between 1982 and 2004. So that would be currently between ages 10 and 32. What's most interesting is that right now, you know, these 20-somethings and early 30-somethings are beginning to enter the workforce and become earners in their own right, which has got all the financial services companies really interested in finding out more about them.
Great. So when you look at the engagement of this group, what do you notice that's particularly different about the way they engage?
Well, if you think about their arc through history, Brett, you know, they've really been through some turbulent times in our society. You know, everything was great in the 90s when they were young. They were told that they would achieve all their life's dreams, the white picket fence lifestyle if they just followed the right path, which was explained to them as being heavily favoring education and higher education at that. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and a recession later, the world has sort of changed for them. So if you could project yourself, Brett, into a mindset where there's all this turbulence going on around them, they're risk averse and somewhat skeptical. They've seen the stock market fall in half in their short lifetimes. They've seen the housing market cut in half in their short lifetimes. And so they've got a few concerns about where to place their money and where to invest their money. They're also not so sure whether they should follow their parents' lead. They've seen their parents, you know, struggle and work only to have it sort of fall away from them. So they're open to a number of different voices in terms of where they get advice from. But more than anything, they crave simplicity and expertise, and they want people who talk to them on their terms, in their language, understanding their current life stage, and so how they, what kinds of products and services they need. That being said, they're tremendous savers. They're very careful with money. Of course, you know, having lived through the times that they have, they know that, you know, money matters, and so they really work hard to make sure that they put some away for a rainy day.
Well, we're going to be hearing from a blogger who is in this space in a little while as well. So that's going to be, give us some extra flavor to that. In terms of the way financial institutions are working with millennials, we haven't really seen a lot of adaptation to this, have we? There's sort of an expectation that, you know, particularly, in countries like the United States, there's still an expectation they're going to walk into a branch and engage with a bank just the way their parents and grandparents did. But I'm really skeptical on that. Who are we seeing that's really adapting to this changing behavior and engagement model differently?
Well, in addition to a number of startups, I think Mint would be the one that we'd all look to is maybe getting this ball rolling. Again, the simplicity of that app and the ability to clear through the clutter of multiple relationships and be able to bring it all to one place to understand. Of course, you know, Moovin is something that's absolutely along those same lines and doing a really great job of it. But we've worked with a few large organizations. Fidelity has a website that we've helped them with called Money Firsts, which is this website where a conversation started around, you know, the first time you get a car loan, the first time you get a student loan, the first time you start thinking about the various financial milestones in your life, and really making sure that that's kind of tuned to their reality. But you're absolutely right. Most banks think, hey, it worked for me and my father and my grandfather, and so why do I need to change a thing? The reality is that millennials are vastly different. They've grown up not only at a time of great turmoil, but a time of great technological change. And, people within these age groups think that the world used to work in a very antiquated, fashion, and can't wait for these things to get hacked and, in their minds, improved and made more efficient. So you see millennials, they're actually a fairly straight-laced generation, but if there is a revolution from within their generation, there's a revolution against obsolete, ineffective ways of doing things that are hallmarks of the past instead of, indicative of what their current reality is.
So, I've been quite interested in the way this will change some of the basic elements of how you apply for a financial service product. Particularly sort of the concept of an application form and a signature is one that I really am skeptical on that this will survive. Actually, we've had Chris Skinner on the show a few weeks ago, and Chris talks about this as very much an analog world and it doesn't translate to digital at all. So, what are your thoughts in respect to that element of the engagement, how it will start to be tailored around context, around moments, and much more seamless delivery of these things rather than this sort of predictive perspective. You research a product, you go to a branch, you fill out a piece of paper, you sign it, and then you wait to see whether you've been approved.
Yeah. If you think about it, imagine a generation that at the age of 8, on average, had access to all the world's information. You know, they've been with Wikipedia, or, you know, that you'd be able to, in some ways, invert the sort of chain of command between, you know, producer and consumer on front after front after front. When they were in college, they used Rate My Professor to drive their professor out of the academic institution if they weren't performing to their satisfaction. So, you know, these kids are really used to technology empowering them, and so they've had the encouragement and the know-how to change everything. And nothing has escaped their view to date. The music industry, the movie industry, the television industry, you know, a lot of these are monumental movements are being absolutely impacted by them. But back to the financial services industry, without a doubt, they look at a long and arduous 40-step process and think, you know, this isn't for me. This isn't my life. I'll give you another great example. HitchSwitch is a website for when millennials get married. They don't want to go to stand in the line at the DMV and wait in line to get their driver's license changed because they changed their last name. They look to applications and tools, mostly on mobile platforms, that take a 40-step process and condense it down to 2 steps. And in their words, it's life hacking. They're hacking.
Right. So workarounds is a very strong driver here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're a builder culture. If they don't see a tool that can do the job the way they think it should, well, before you know it, they've developed the app and started the company that moves down that path.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So in terms of what you guys are doing at Y-Pulse, tell me about the work you're specifically doing and how you're involved in this on an industry basis.
Yeah, you know, we started 10 years ago. We thought, wouldn't it make us smarter if we would take and summarize everything going on in the world of youth from a marketing perspective every morning? And so we produce a daily newsletter, send that out now to 30,000 marketers every day to kind of keep them in the loop of what's going on in the world of millennials and how it matters to them. From there, we've got syndicated research products where, you know, we create not only reports but data and articles that talk about what's going on in their world, sell those to, you know, multiple clients, many of whom are financial institutions. And then from there, custom market research. When a client has a specific initiative or a problem that they can't just sort of take an off-the-shelf solution toward, we're there to help.
So I'm looking at your site right now. There's some recent research on Abercrombie & Fitch and Hyperlapse, this new video tech and so forth. How do you panel the Gen Ys? How do you get the data?
So we have a couple of different communities. One is a mobile social app called Thumb, where 1.7 million people, 50% of whom are under the age of 18 and the rest are under the age of 35, go to ask and answer each other's questions. Should I buy this? Should I wear this? Should I dump my boyfriend or girlfriend? And that becomes sort of a covert understanding for us. We get to see what they're asking each other.
Yeah, you're observers.
From there, we've got a formal market research platform called SurveyU, the letter U.com. And basically there, you know, they do it the old-fashioned way. They do it my way. Some mid-40s balding white guy has decided that, you know, 30 to 50 questions at a time and, 12 to 15 minutes on either a mobile phone or on the web where we ask one question after another on behalf of our clients. And listen, for millennials, that's about as interesting as going to the dentist. And so we pay them. You know, we give them index to $10 an hour. For a 15-minute survey, we'll pay them $2.50 to share their opinions. And over the course of a year, we'll get, well, Brett, it'll sound a little outlandish, but through Thumb, we get 1.8 million opinions a day. And through SurveyU, we might get 1.8 million opinions a year.
Great. Well, thanks, Dan, for that. I want to get a quick break, and then we can get into this a little bit after. But just after the break, we're going to have Amanda joining us. She's a millennial who runs a blog, and she's also working in the financial services space. So we'll hear what a real millennial has to say about this. We'll be right back after this break.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking, with features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance. Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. Before the break, we were talking with Dan Coates, the president of YPulse, talking about some really interesting research and insights into millennials. We talked a lot about millennials before, but the research is consistent. They just don't behave like their parents and grandparents do when it comes to financial services. So, you know, this is, I don't know how else we get this message through except keep talking about it and keep looking at the data. Right now, what I'd like to do is invite Amanda Stanhouse onto the show. Amanda runs a blog called ExoBetty. She's a millennial. She's working in the financial services space, in the fintech space. Amanda, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you so much for having me, Brett.
So you're actually in the studio with us in New York today. So thanks for it's a nice day today. So
yes. So
tell us about ExoBetty and why you started this blog.
Great. Well, I was studying economics at McGill University, and I was coming across my classmates making elementary money mistakes, and I guess I also realized that I come from a fairly financially literate family, and, you know, just my classmates didn't know better to not give their best friends their debit cards with their PIN. And so I created a character, Betty, who shares her fabulous and frugal journey to become financially literate. So it was a daily blog that each day explained, you know, a checking account versus a saving account versus a money market account. Also, various options when it comes to investing, value investing. And I did a book review of The Intelligent Investor, and also did a book review of A Random Walk Down Wall Street. So essentially my goal with the blog was to explain all the options to my peers when it came to their money and investing.
How do you get the news out of the blog? How do they get the blog out there with your friends and those that read it and follow it?
Definitely. So it was just originally for a group of friends and got people to hear about it through McGill, my school, and my family and friends network, and then also tried to connect with other financial blogs and news outlets, and I eventually became a contributor to Smart Assets blog as well, so writing about tips regarding daily finances.
Cool. So tell me about some of the things that behaviorally you think millennials are challenged with. You talked about the debit cards and giving it to a friend and with a PIN, but
yeah.
What are some of the other challenges that millennials find, either because they just view the world differently or they're coming in at a different time or they don't have the financial education? You know, what are some of the issues you find consistently popping up?
Well, I think that there is a discrepancy since millennials almost never have to interact with a check unless, you know, your grandmother gives you one for your birthday. And I think that having a checkbook was a very good practice of being able to balance it and knowing exactly what your balance was. But now, since you have debit cards and credit cards, you don't necessarily know how much money is in the bank at any one time unless you go check your balance on whether you go into the bank to the ATM or if you sign in online.
Yep.
So there is an issue of, you know, just first of all, knowing how much money that you can spend, and then secondly, how much money should you be spending, creating a budget, making informed decisions about your weekend spending.
I've always wondered why banks still offer millennials checking accounts. It sort of seems so counterintuitive to me, because a millennial is not going to identify with a checkbook or a checking account. Does that hold true? Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, no, I don't even have a checkbook for my checking account. Yeah. It was just a way to get a debit card and a credit card,
right,
sort of thing.
Yeah. What about dealing with student debt when they leave university, elements like this, when they, you know, first start working, thinking about a home? What about those issues?
Well, and so there are so many things to juggle, especially right after you get out of school. You have student loans usually, as well as you probably will want to go back to graduate school. You're starting your new job. You're probably living in the big city, which is very exciting in and of itself. And then something that I focused specifically on my blog was explaining the time value of money, and that your earning potential is eventually going to grow, but at your 20s, you really have compound interest on your side to be saving for retirement. So setting up your 401k or IRA early on, just, you know, not making huge contributions, but just something to create that habit of saving. And so balancing all of that can be very intimidating. And nothing that I gave, of course, advice on, but just providing the options and the insight to make informed decision making was important to me.
So just before we wrap up, do you think then that millennials, because of the different way they engage, that it's going to become really important for them to have access to more tools that they can use simply? Because I think that concept of that financial education, which creates that behavior, I think that's one of the things that is a little challenged here. It needs to be more like they need the tools to create the behavior. Is that?
Yes, and I think it will be a happy medium of, you know, creating automated tools, whether it's on your cell phone or a website that you can access, but having it be completely personalized to their situation, right, and not just, you know, reading blanketed advice. And so, and having that personal touch, I don't think that will ever go away.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might be on the phone talking to someone or, you know, instant messaging, but having that be an actual person instead of a computer, I think will be
so the modality critical. Of it. Of
exactly.
The human contact might be different, not necessarily in a branch, but still speaking to you.
Yeah,
human.
You'll still have that interaction.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. That's great. So if we want to read about a millennial giving other millennials financial advice, how do we find your blog?
So I write under a pen name, Betty, and the website is xobettie.com.
Great. Well, Amanda Stanis, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks.
Thank you.
Great. So right now, we'd like to continue this theme on the millennial side. And Sam Moore and Scott McCormack are also going to join us. Sam is at Powell & Gallagher. He's a managing consultant there. Scott is the president CEO of Social Money. They're also the creators of Smarty Pig, so one of these sort of behavioral spending initiatives. Sam and Scott, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks, Brett. Hi, Brett. Thanks for having us.
So Sam, tell us a little bit about the consulting work you do.
Sure. So I'm with Carlisle & Gallagher. It's a consulting company that's been around well over a decade now. It's focused primarily on business and technology consulting, but exclusively in the financial services space in North America. So our clients tend to be the very large banks. So we have 7 of the top 10 banks as clients. So a very niche and very focused space.
And Scott, tell us about Social Money and Smarty Pig.
Yeah, so Social Money, we started out as delivering a product called Smarty Pig back in 2007, designed primarily for people to save for the things that they want to need. Today, Social Money is taking the initiatives behind Smarty Pig, such as the core banking platform that we built proprietary for that product, and now repurposing it and enabling others, banks and non-banks, to deliver financial services on top of that platform. Primarily focused at things that are in the mobile and online banking, digital banking platform space.
Cool. Now, Sam, you heard from Amanda, which I thought was an excellent introduction to this piece, and we heard before the segment from Dan. Tell me about what makes millennials different.
Well, from a banking perspective, we obviously are looking at this generation as they're the next wave that's coming through. We've had the baby boomers that, of course, we've been engaged with, but I can't remember if Dan said the number. You're looking at 80 to 85 million, depending upon the estimate, of folks that are moving into a banking relationship. And we've seen a shift. I can relate to this, right? I have 4 kids. I have 2 that are in college, and then I have 2 that are the next generation that are coming up. And my 2 in college, the way that they engage their relationship, if you will, at the bank, is shifting because their life experiences are shifting. Part of this is due to the credit crisis that we ran through. Part of it is the experiences that they've had. And part of it is that cultural shift that we're seeing come from millennials. So when you think about that young age group from a banking perspective, traditionally that relationship you build in comes through the credit cards that they open up with you, the bank accounts, and the loans, so the mortgages that they would typically do, the car loans, that would start that relationship. And then would evolve as they become more and more earners, if you will, into that traditional savings and the retirement accounts and such. But what we're seeing over and over again with this generation specifically is a delay in that engagement model. We're seeing home ownership for that generation at an all-time low. The concept of owning a car, the number of driver's licenses that are issued within this generation. My 17-year-old, I had to beg her to get her driver's license. She had no desire to get her license or really to own a car. She's fine not going through that model. Now, she looks at her life to say, I'll move to New York. I can take the subway. Why do I care about a car? Why do I care about that possession? The same with marriage. Generations getting married later in life. So from a financial picture, what we're accustomed to is, the two-income home and, that type of wage earners. So, again, you're seeing that delay. But those are all major shifts in a relationship with the bank. You delay that 3 or 4 years across 80 to 85 million folks, and that's an impact.
So just so you're just backing up what you're saying about your 17-year-old, we hit peak car in November 2007. That's in terms of vehicle miles driven on all roads. This is in the United States at least. But this trend appears to follow in most developed markets where actually, millennials are just not so focused on this. I wonder whether it'll change when we have self-driving cars. But at the end of the day, I think, they've got a different consciousness about this. So they are behaving differently, which I think is the key to this, is we have to, we can't be expecting them to make the same financial decisions at the same time of life or have the same perspective or urgency about these things as their parents did.
I couldn't agree more. The engagement model, the way we approach that relationship, the way you market, the products that you put in play, you can't depend on what you had for 20 years. That doesn't fly anymore. Even 5 years ago, the technology shifts that we're seeing are, you know, it's Moore's Law, right? More and more rapid development and adoption of those. And you're seeing that in multiple spaces. Think about retail. So school just started for my kids in Florida. Typically, in the July-August time frame, you go out and buy a ton of clothes for your kids. That's where the spend happens. And it was done at Abercrombie. It was done at all the stores with incredibly annoying music when you're pushing 50 like me. That shift has happened. We've seen, I think, a 15% drop in retail sales for those stores. They tend to shop at H&M, nice British import, if I remember right, Forever 21, more discount clothing, because the desire of my 17- and 20-year-old daughter isn't so much on the clothes. They're fine going cheaper on that, but not on their iPhone.
Yeah, absolutely.
The spend will occur on technology, not on the technology and the experiences is where the spend will take place.
So, Scott, you've been working on this problem of sort of creating positive savings behavior with SmartyPig. And you guys work with, you have your funds deposited with BBVA in the U.S. But tell me about how you create different behaviors or savings behaviors with millennials, because they seem like they're a lot less credit focused than the previous generation, actually.
Yeah, so what's interesting about SmartyPig is, you know, it grew 100% virally. So a lot of things that your earlier guest and Sam just talked about, you know, that is happening in that space or in that sector, that demographic, is that they begin to trust differently than our parents or even ourselves, right? They trust their family and friends and the communication about financial services from them more than they would direct from, you know, a financial institution. So inside of SmartyPig, you know, going 100% virally, we allow the users to share what they're saving for. And about 70% of the user base has shared at least one goal relative to what they're saving for.
And so really cool is that, do you think that's also a mark of the millennials? Because we, you know, we haven't talked much about our money, you know, as Gen X and baby boomers. We don't talk about money much. We don't talk about how much we earn, how much we save. Do you think there's a tendency for millennials to be more open about those things?
Well, I think naturally, I think it's a really good point, because we talk a lot in our office about, you know, the millennials share everything, right? They share who they're dating, where they're traveling, what they're eating. You know, so for them to utilize that community to talk about what their, you know, what their ambitions for financial services are is a lot different, like you said. That, I mean, you know, we would tend to be more isolated, you know, as the previous demographic, right, to sharing those things. But in this case, you know, they're sharing, and not only are they sharing, but that community is effectively enhancing that experience by, you know, giving them attaboys and, you know, hey, great job, can I contribute to your goal, can I do those things? And so the demographic is different, right? They actually interact inside of those experiences, whereas maybe if I would have shared that I'm going to buy a new house or I'm saving for a down payment on a house, I might have only shared that with my parents. And, you know, that would have been more of a debt experience. And in this case,
right,
you know, the demographic is looking at that as an experience completely different than maybe our parents.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the fact that they generally seem, and I don't know, why do you think it is that millennials are more focused on savings and cash these days than debt and investments? Is there any view on that?
I think I'll share one, and then Sam, you might have a thought. But, you know, again, we started SmartyPig during the financial crisis, and I think Dan mentioned it. You know, I think going through that as a young individual or now a young adult, you know, you may change. So not only are you expecting change to happen for you, but you actually assert change in how you do things. And I think, you know, that demographic is clearly focused on being financially fit differently than maybe those that would have been credit first saving seconds.
Yeah, you could almost say they're preoccupied with it because of growing up through the financial crisis. All right, well, let's have a quick break, Scott, Sam, and after the break, we can continue this discussion. Very interested. You're listening to Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King, your host. We'll be right back after this short message from our sponsors.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin', a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin' app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin' is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin' today.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. Before the break, we were talking with Sam Moore and Scott McCormack and Dan as well about the millennials. And at this part of the segment, I always like to sort of get into a bit of future visioning and sort of what happens in the next 5 or 10 years. But Before that, just during the break, we were sort of chatting about this, and Sam, you brought up the point that, you know, there is some historical learnings in terms of how people respond psychologically to a recession or depression, and the focus we see on savings coming off the back of the financial crisis by millennials, it has some parallel in terms of how people responded coming off the back of the Great Depression in the 30s. Do you want to expand on that?
Yes, I think you can never throwaway history, despite all the technology advances that we have. I think you always have to couple that with looking back and seeing what took place. So you come out of the Great Depression, what we call the silent generation, whereas we have this generation called the millennials. And there are some distinct similarities. So that concept of, I need to have that nest egg. I have to have that savings. I don't want to repeat the mistakes of my parents. Just said as someone who's a parent of millennials. You know, historically, the baby boomers, a large percentage of them have saved horribly. There is a retirement crisis that we're coming to in the U.S. To some extent, that is a cultural difference. When you get to some of the countries in Europe, for example, like Germany, where they tend to be super savers and not use credit to the extent that we do. But I think there's that emotional or experience quality that we've embedded as parents into our kids to say, don't make the mistakes that we did. Start saving early. As the blogger said, put the money into the 401k. You know, start early. And we're actually seeing those numbers that millennials are putting money into their 401k earlier than others. It's that habit of savings. And so solutions such as social money, SmartyPig are fantastic. Scott, I think your engagement rate is something like 80% millennials, if I'm not mistaken. The same yeah.
Scott, did you want to jump in?
I mean, from a base customer base, it's you know, it's significant. So to Sam's point, I mean, millennials are truly utilizing online and clearly mobile first, you know, to save. And you know, it's a significant change that from when I got into banking as a 19-year former banking executive. You know, there's just a major sea change happening.
Okay, so let's get into what it looks like in 5 to 10 years' time, because I think that we have a looming challenge here. If you're in the banking or financial services space and you expect someone to walk into a branch and fill out a form to start a relationship, whether it's on an IRA, a 401k, a mortgage, or a checking account, the message I'm hearing pretty consistently here is you're going to be screwed. The revenue's just going to dry up. Now, you know, there's obviously some of these affluent customers that are sticking around and they still behave that way, but if you're looking at new revenue, new customers, you're just not going to be able to execute that way. Am I speaking out of turn here? Are you guys on the same page as me here?
Yep, agree completely. Sure.
So who you know, SmartyPig's obviously done very well with this, you know, particularly the viral element. But you know, what are the elements that's going to make a financial service, you know, a financial services institution successful in 5 to 10 years' time in terms of that engagement problem?
If I could dive in, this is Dan. You know, the things that are really important is that millennials aren't averse to people. In fact, they don't mind people at all. They prefer technology on transactional things, but they actually do appreciate people with expertise who are able to help them. One thing that I will say is that if that person, you know, sits behind a desk with a circa 1990s IBM computer in front of them, they're sort of marking to the millennial that they're from the old world, and they'll quickly flee that environment. And so what we see is there's plenty of opportunities for organizations with expertise, with understanding. Just you have to understand the format and the form factor that you need to deliver that under. So people are just fine as long as they're adding value. Otherwise, it should be something mobile, you know, something quick and effortless that allows them to get the basic nuts and bolts things done.
Sam, Scott, yeah. Do either of you guys have something to add?
Yeah, I would add to that in that, you know, I think this demographic is really, you know, to Dan's point earlier, in an on-demand type of fashion as well. So some things that we're doing at SmartyPig and at Social Money, such as like one-click savings, where you can be anywhere on the internet, just like in Pinterest, and select something that you want and begin that savings experience without ever leaving that site by opening up a goal side of your SmartyPig account. Those are things that deliver kind of on-demand type of service, and I would think literacy and content around savings and life stages and things that those kids, those millennials are going through now, are also going to be very, very relevant to them, back to the financial advice that Dan was just talking about.
Yeah, Brett, if I could add just one more example. We just picked up a client called Active Hours, and this is an organization that's dedicated to synchronizing your pay. So you sign in with an app, and you basically get paid for the work you did today. And if you think about it, this is another attack by the millennials on the inefficient. You know, why is a pay period 2 weeks? And why is it that I work for 2 weeks before I get paid? I work
That's
today.
Interesting.
I got bills to pay. I want to get paid right now. And so I think just the synchronization of the inflows and the outflows and this inefficient model of, you know, your credit card is on this date, but your payroll comes into your account on that date. Millennials look at all that and think, all right, this is not my problem. This is your problem. You solve it.
Brett, I think what I would add in, and couldn't agree more with the points Dan and Scott had made, I'd say looking out 5 to 10 years, I think you're going to continue to see a trend that we're seeing right now, and that's what I would call banking on the edges. What I mean by that is there was multiple surveys done. I'm sure you've seen that Millennial Disruption Index study by Scratch, which was fantastic, of millennials. And they'll say that from an area that they see the most disruption in is banking. Outside of everything else, banking was number one. And yet, a plurality of millennials bank with the very large banks, with CG's clients, for example. So we see a disproportionate number banking with them, and then on the opposite edge, the neobanks, such as Movin, such as Simple, such as SmartyPig, Venmo, a great example, using the social graph on spend. There's two distinct advantages there. From the large bank, I have the capital that I can invest to modify my engagement models. If I'm the neobanks, I have that singularity of focus, for example, that Movin had. I look to the ones in the middle, the credit unions, the smaller community banks that don't have that capital, that I think are going to be somewhat challenged in engaging this group, and will seriously have to look at the partnerships that they engage with, such as, here's a plug, for SmartyPig, Social Money, for Movin, and those type of solutions.
And in terms of that ability to disrupt, do you guys see, you know, now we've got obviously mobile payments changing, and we heard a couple of weeks ago that Facebook's going to have they've put a patent in place for personal financial management through Facebook. It seems like Google, Apple, and Facebook are more they're going to be definitely playing in this space from an engagement perspective. I don't think they want to be banks, but I think they are accepting the fact that they have connections with millennials in a unique way to engage them in products. So, in terms of the virality, maybe Scott, you can answer this. How much are banks going to be dependent on these types of networks to get access to customers in the future? Particularly millennials.
Well, I think a lot, and I think that's going to make things difficult, right? Because they have their own ecosystems, and they're interacting with those customers in unique ways that are dependent on models that they've created for themselves. And so they look at financial services as another piece, and clearly they have the leverage. So I think the customers in those that work with an Apple or work with a Facebook or work with an Amazon or work with those organizations to buy or use their services will expect, and I think in that piece that Sam was talking about, I think, you know, the customer themselves expect that they'll ultimately receive services from those organizations. So as Sam mentioned, partnerships are going to be critical, I think, to at least this demographic for a financial service or institution, you know, making it through, as you called it, Brett, you know, they're screwed. I think they really have to think smarter, and they have to change, and they have to be willing to do that fast, because things are moving at a pace that most financial institutions just aren't familiar with, right?
So you're going to hear, though, from financial institutions. We've heard all this before. We heard it when the internet came along. Nothing changed. We still have, the majority of new bank accounts are still open in a bank branch. Obviously, I've written on this extensively. and I had one of the major brands on the East Coast that focuses mostly on retired people said, look, we're not seeing the decline in branch activity that you've been talking about, and we're just not sure that this is really going to happen. So when do you think it's going to be that banks are going to say, the data is unequivocally showing that there's a shift in behavior here? What's the tipping point?
I would add that, first of all, it's the largest generation in terms of population in American history. That's the first thing. They're at a life stage right now where their economic force hasn't quite been felt yet. But by the year 2017, they'll exceed the boomers in terms of their earning and income and financial power. So I think that, the first thing that I'd say is they're digital natives. We Xers, we grew up where banks, we got used to things in the old world way. So when we sort of rose to our place in society, we kind of had one foot in one world and one foot in the other. These are kids that are quickly becoming the economic force of America. A stat that I came up with the other day through Bureau of Labor Statistics is 10,000 millennials are joining the workforce every day and will continue to do so for the next 10 years.
Wow.
So mass amounts of people heading into their prime earning years who are digital natives and really don't have a lot of respect or understanding of the old way of doing things is going to force the shift.
Okay. Well, do you guys think that this is a localized phenomenon? Are we tending to see more of this behavioral shift here in the U.S., or do you think this is a global thing?
Our work sure is global. Culture is converging worldwide. Kids are seeing the same movies no matter what country they're in, reading the same books. And then technology is just bringing them together through Skype and a number of other channels. They know what's going on around the world better than any generation before.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think from a financial services space, we have to learn to focus outside of just North America. The market in China and what's taking place there. We talk about Amazon and PayPal and their relationships. You think about Amazon as that retailer, but you think about Alibaba and the sheer mobile commerce and e-commerce model that they have. There's a significant shift that's going on with a massive population base. And I think there's multiple lessons that can be learned there. You have to take into account, cultural and economic conditions. But I agree. I think it's a phenomenon that we're going to see really across the globe.
Great. All right. Well, listen, guys, we're going to wrap it up. We've run out of time. But Dan from YPulse, Scott McCormack from Social Money, the creators of Smarty Pig, and Sam Moore from Powell and Gallagher. Thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks today, talking millennials. Great. So that's another Breaking Banks show. We got some great shows planned for you guys in the next few weeks. If you haven't caught up with some of the later shows, make sure you check out breakingbanks.com. You can download the episodes there or, of course, iTunes and Stitcher Radio. But thanks again for joining us on Breaking Banks this week. I'm your host, Brett King. We will see you again next week. Bye.
Been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.